Don't be afraid of the dark. Just relax and let the darkness fall over you.
Welcome to Afraidish, a podcast where every four episodes we venture into a new state and take a deep dive into the history and paranormal while enjoying some tasty adult beverages. From ghost sightings to hauntings, urban legends and cryptids, let's get weird and afraid-ish together. Hello and welcome to episode 14 or episode 2 of Arkansas. I'm Paul.
And I'm Ashley.
It's been a long time since we've gotten to record again.
As always.
Yep. So these notes are from, like, a month ago.
That's all right. We're here.
Yeah. We did a lot of stuff since then.
Yeah.
I can't remember what we done. We started skating. Roller skating.
Most of you already know that, except none of you ever come out, so...
It's all right.
Losers.
As long as we get our exercise.
It is very good exercise.
Yeah, it is. Let's go ahead and get into it. Here are another five fun facts about Arkansas.
Woo-hoo!
Number one, 47 hot springs flow from Hot Springs Mountain at an average temperature of 143 degrees.
Holy shit!
Yeah. Number two, because the hot spring water is said to be therapeutic for ailments... Many famous faces have visited hot springs over the years, including Franklin D. Roosevelt, Babe Ruth, and Al Capone.
Ooh. What a colorful cast of characters.
Yeah. Number three, Arkansas's most important crop is rice. It's different, yep.
I had never... Yep. Never would have guessed if you had tried to quiz me on that. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire style would not have guessed rice.
Yep. The state is the leading producer of rice and provides 46% of the country's supply.
Wow.
Arkansas produces more rice than any other state. Rice production in Arkansas is a $6 billion industry. That means the rice industry brings almost as much money into the state as all of Dillard's, the Little Rock-based national retail chain.
Wow. Also did not know Dillard's was based in Arkansas either. Yeah,
neither did I. Number four. Allegedly, it is illegal to keep an alligator in your bathtub in Arkansas.
Ha! Huh. Wonder why that law's on the books.
I don't know.
Gee. Do they have alligators? Like, is that...
I mean, as pets. They have, like, you know, get up a pet store.
It's not like Florida where, like, you go out and pick up an alligator off the side of the road. Yeah. Right?
I like these little... Right.
Okay.
I like these little weird laws from every state. They're fun.
They're funny.
And number five. In 1957, for the first time in the history of the state, 9 African Americans were inducted into Little Rock Central High School. The school previously allowed only white students to attend. This event marked an important milestone in the nation's civil rights movement.
1957.
Yes.
Like, I know to a lot of us thinking about that date, that may seem like a really long time ago. But, like, most of us, either our parents or grandparents were alive at that time.
Yeah.
Like, in one way or another, either very small children or, like, young adult age. That's not that fucking... 1957?
Yes.
Fuck racism.
Yes. All right. So, I talked about the 1886 Crescent Hotel and Spa in the last episode.
Yes.
And I was going to talk about its sister hotel, but the episode was pretty long already. So I'm going to talk about the 1905 Basin Park Hotel in this episode.
Okay.
The Basin Park Hotel is located on the north side of Basin Circle Park on Spring Street in the downtown building district. It was built on the site of the Perry House, a four-story hotel built in 1881. Captain Joseph Perry built the hotel after moving to Eureka Springs because of poor health. He had several hotels in different locations of the United States prior to his arrival here. The Perry House, which was lost in the fire of 1890, was considered a fine hotel. Construction of the Basin Park Hotel was started in 1904 and completed in 1905, opening May 5th. A grand opening was held on July 1st, 1905. William M. Duncan and Associates built the hotel. They owned the syndicate company, which owned and operated many businesses in town. The building, including furnishings, cost over $50,000, which is roughly $1.8 million today.
Wow.
Yeah.
That seems very low compared to some of the other hotels that we've talked about.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty, I mean, it's not the biggest hotel, but it's substantial.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Like the Crescent Hotel and many other buildings in town, the limestone quarry near the town of Beaver provided the rock exterior of the hotel. There are several horizontal rows of red dolomite around this building. Although very evident when built, it is quite easy to miss seeing the red dolomite now.
Oh.
It had 100 rooms, a cage elevator, electric lights, steam heat, and telephones in the rooms. It also had complete fire protection
on the because of the last one.
Yeah. On the top floor was a ballroom with a hardwood floor that was often referred to as the roof garden.
Oh.
In later years, the Barefoot Ball was an annual event there, and dances with live bands became a regular event at the Basin Park Hotel.
Fun.
Yeah. The area from the lobby to the park, which is now a gift shop, was a very good restaurant for many years called the Basin Park Coffee Shop.
Oh.
The restaurant,
I'd rather have a coffee shop than a souvenir shop.
Yeah, for real. The restaurant was moved back upstairs onto the second floor in the old Ozark Room, renamed Perry Room, when the hotel was sold and remodeled in the mid-1980s.
I'm guessing that's the balcony bar or whatever it's called.
I think so. I can't remember what it's called now.
Yeah, I know.
We ate there.
I keep wanting to call it the Skyview, but that's the wrong hotel.
Yeah. It became a tour hotel and did quite well with bus tours through a succession of owners and managers. The first year it opened as a slice of pie and shortly went to buffets for in-house tours only. The restaurant was called the Coach and Four. For 4 years, then it became Ripley's. The hotel was sold again in 1992, and the restaurant was named The Balcony.
Okay.
Yeah. The Basin Park Hotel is truly unique because it is built into the side of the mountain.
Yeah.
In 1944, the hotel was purchased by Roy Parkhill for his nephew, Joe Parkhill. Joe did not spare anything to improve the hotel. Various entertainments were added, including horseback riding, fishing, dancing, as well as hay rides.
Where? In the ballroom?
Oh, I guess up and down the streets.
Okay.
I mean, it is Main Street.
I know. No, I know. Like, obviously, you can shuttle off to different activities. I'm just picturing, like, that hotel is so well, it's not tiny, but I was just like, what?
Let's go through a hayride in the hotel. Does everybody fit in the cage elevator?
A hay maze a la Dwight Schrute. In the ballroom. Okay.
Anyways. He even installed slot machines and served alcohol even though it was against the law.
Ooh.
As a result of this, rumors spread that his customers were mobsters.
You know.
They probably were.
Al Capone visiting the state for the springs.
Yeah. The hotel was raided in 1955 and Joe and two other people were arrested. Parkhill then sold the hotel and moved to a different place. In 1997, the Roenick couple bought the Basin Park Hotel as well as the Crescent Hotel, which we talked about, who we talked about last episode. Both hotels underwent a series of renovations and were modernized.
But not, I would say not too modernized. Like they didn't remove the character. I mean,
they're doing, when we visited this year in January, they were under another remodel.
Well, I think they were just doing annual maintenance.
No, they were remodeling. They even showed pictures of the newly remodeled rooms.
Okay, so they weren't just doing standard maintenance in the off season. Yeah,
they were doing actual updates and remodeling again. And
well, anyway, like I still feel like as modernized as the hotel has been, they've managed to really retain the original character.
Oh yeah,
and
it still has a lot of the history. Charm. Yeah,
yeah. It's not like they gutted it and turned it into a dystopian fantasy.
Yeah. Now for the hauntings.
Yay!
The former owner's wife might be the woman spotted walking inside the building and along the hotel grounds. Described as having pale blonde hair and dark blue eyes, she never seems to bother anyone but clearly isn't happy.
Hmm.
Witnesses rarely describe the woman as smiling, and many find her presence deeply unsettling. Her appearance is in sharp contrast to the little girl, also spotted on the grounds. Usually described as a girl between the ages of 5 and 8, she wears a bright and cheerful yellow dress and always wears her hair pulled back in 2 pigtails.
Aww.
Though not everyone believes that orbs indicate the presence of ghosts, the Basin Park Hotel is home to plenty of strange and unusual orbs. Guests sometimes report seeing what looks like tiny and bright lights following them around, and others spot larger and smaller orbs both inside and outside of the hotel. Photographs were taken at the hotel show multiple orbs as well. Many different Many different paranormal groups came to the Basin Park Hotel to conduct research over the years, and many of those groups picked up voices on recorders, electromagnetic spikes in rooms on the 2nd and 3rd floor, and other proof of ghosts. Supposed proof. Some believe that a few of its ghosts date back to the 1930s, when the hotel operated an illegal gambling parlor and served as a speakeasy.
I mean...
Regardless of where the ghosts come from or who they are, many guests leave knowing without a doubt that the Basin Park Hotel is haunted. If you stayed in the Basin Park Hotel, would it make you afraid-ish?
I mean, probably not.
No, I mean, I've stayed there.
No, I mean, I haven't, but...
Yeah.
We stayed in the far more haunted
Crescent
and had... I mean... Aside from the fucking ice bucket debacle, it's fine. And then assholes across the hall.
Oh my gosh. If anybody hasn't listened to that episode yet, go back to episode 13. You gotta listen to that story.
Fucked up.
I'm sorry that was short. It's just, I mean, not a lot of history to it.
Yeah, I was like, what? Like, there's where's not... the history?
Yeah, I know.
For a place that was like... founded for similar reasons as the Crescent. I mean, obviously, the Crescent has a much more storied history, being a sanatorium. I don't know. A tuberculosis hospital.
Sanatorium, I think. Yeah.
Anywho, the Basin Park was still founded, like, because of the spring. And it's,
right, yeah.
It has the spring. It's on the grounds with the original Eureka Spring. So I would just think that there would be more.
I'm sure there was.
History. You just didn't.
I just don't have the time to do a deep dive, unfortunately.
Why are you looking at me like that, sir?
No, I'm just saying.
As if I have time to do deep dive research for your podcast.
I just don't. I mean, I just wanted to talk about a little bit of the history and a little bit of the hauntings. And
so you did stay there.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about your visit?
Sure. Well, I stayed there with my first wife. We got married down there in 2005, and we got a little wedding package. Got married at the Crescent Hotel, stayed the night at the Basin Park Hotel. It didn't feel any... I mean...
You don't remember any creepiness?
No. Or
spooks or...
No, we just walked around downtown. No.
I have to say, few places have given me the sheer number of good vibes as Eureka Springs gives me. Like, just walking through that town is just the most pleasant experience ever. Like, I don't know.
I mean, it was the off season and not as many people.
No, I'm not talking about I'm talking about just like the overall energy of that area. Now, I've been places that have some really thick, sticky energy. I would say that the Crescent Hotel, it definitely has some thicker pockets of energy, maybe, if we can get into a little bit more of a woo-woo vernacular here. But it wasn't, like, super heavy the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, there are places that I felt a little bit more on edge.
Yeah.
At the Crescent. And, you know, I haven't spent nearly as much time at the Basin Park, but I don't know. Just overall, Eureka Springs is just such a... And it might be just the little folk Victorian gingerbread houses that line the streets that one day we will buy one and happily ever after there. So, manifesting hard that one. Real hard. Listen to this podcast. Get us some ad revenue so that I can buy a Victorian gingerbread house in Eureka Springs.
Okay? It's kind of hard for me only getting one episode out a month. So I need to step up my game.
Yeah, but if a million people listen to one episode every month, I'm just kidding.
I wish.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I have another story.
Oh, you do? Okay. Yes. So that's not the end of the podcast.
No.
Oh, because you're like, well, I'm sorry, that one was so short.
Well.
Jesus.
Well, now let's talk about the Hornibrook Mansion or Empress of Little Rock.
Let's talk about it.
Hornibrook is the guy's last name.
Uh-huh. Sure.
In 1867, James H. Hornibrook and his wife, Margaret McCully Hornibrook, moved from Toronto, Canada to Little Rock, Pulaski County after the Civil War. Upon his arrival in Little Rock, Hornibrook entered a partnership with Miles Q. Townsend in a liquor sales and saloon business that flourished for 22 years. After Hornibrook's financial success, he wished to build a home for his family that was worthy of his accomplishments. The lavish home took approximately 7 years to construct. Yeah.
Yikes.
It was completed in 1888 at a reported cost of $20,000, which is about $597,000 today. Which isn't bad, I mean.
I mean, first of all, it was most likely a mansion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Victorian era.
Yeah.
Very artisanal, lots of craftsmanship, lots of beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
So $500,000 for a house like that versus the houses that are going for $500,000 today, like new builds. Today.
Yeah.
Like the McMansions and the... Although now things are getting better. The new construction and like the designer homes are a lot more intentionally designed. I cannot speak to the materials used, but like 2005 McMansions, I would much rather spend $500,000 on a Victorian. I don't know why I'm ranting about housing prices right now. Maybe that's just because the housing market's fucking insane. And houses that are being built today are kind of shit.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
Anyways.
You can edit that out if you want to.
No.
No.
The average home at the time cost around $2,000.
Okay.
Versus $20,000.
Okay, so what's $2,000 in today's money?
I don't know.
Like a...
Pause.
So, inflation, $2,000 in 1880s is roughly equivalent to $56,373 in today's money.
So that was the average.
That's like a quarter of what the average house is worth right now.
Yeah.
When most houses are going for $200,000.
Yeah.
I'm mad about it.
Anyways. Designed by architects Max Orlop and Caspar Kusiner, the home remains Arkansas's best example of Queen Anne-style Victorian-era architecture. One newspaper reported that all the work on the home was to be done by Arkansans and out of Arkansas materials. Some of the home's most notable features include parquet floors, a wraparound porch, small paned windows, and an interior stained glass skylight. The home was in an irregular floor plan, and the main part of the 7,200 square foot building. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh my God, it hurts.
The home was in a regular floor plan, and the main part of the 7,200 square foot building stands at 2.5 stories with a 3.5 story tower. Yeah.
Is there a picture?
I will have pictures on social media.
Is the tower square?
I don't know. I've heard it's been like a month since I've seen it.
If it's a square tower, I will cry. I will cry tears of sadness. Because
we could go see it. I don't know.
Can we buy it?
No. The Hornibrook family did not get to enjoy the mansion for long. In 1890, 2 years after his home's completion, James H. Hornibrook died at age 49 from an epileptic stroke.
Oh my God!
Hornibrook had hosted a gentleman's evening at his saloon that same evening before making it back to his residence and dying at the front gate.
Fuck!
I know. Margaret Hornibrook remained in the home until her death in 1893. Following the deaths of Mr. and Mrs. Hornibrook, the mansion became the home of the Arkansas Women's College, the first of its kind in the state.
Wow.
Asbury Fowler, an insurance agent and federal marshal, purchased it at the turn of the century. During the 1940s, the Hornibrook home served as a rooming house for women. The Great Depression would shutter the grand home. In the 1970s, it was purchased by Claire Freeman and converted into a nursing home. It was added to the National Register of Historic Places on July 30th, 1974. In 1993, Sharon Welch Blair and Robert Blair acquired the Hornibrook home after extensive preservation and restoration efforts, which consisted of the removal of several added features, including walls, bathrooms, and an elevator. The house was returned to the original floor plan. Once the renovations were completed, the Blair family opened the Empress of Little Rock bed and breakfast in the home.
Aww. So is it a bed and breakfast currently?
Uh-huh. I think so. Yep. It's called the Empress of Little Rock.
Okay.
And now for the hauntings.
Okay.
The iconic bed and breakfast has seen many guests in the 130 years it has stood. But many have never left. According to tales, some of the men and women who once called the Empress home still wander its halls, including Mr. Hornibrook himself.
I mean, can you blame him?
I wouldn't leave there.
Spent all that time and money building a beautiful home only to die.
I know.
Just a few short years later?
Yeah.
I'd be pissed, man.
Yeah. Fuck. Playing cards have been seen seen mysteriously strewn throughout Mr. Hornibrook's poker room floor.
Oh.
The ghost of a well-dressed man with a Hamburg hat has been seen on the stairs and in rooms of the historic home. Owners Sharon and Robert Blair have reported a number of paranormal activities inside the old mansion, including seeing a period-dressed gentleman making his way down the staircase before disappearing. During the restoration of the home, a painter found himself locked in an upstairs poker room, but a handle and lock had not been added to the door. After retrieving a screwdriver to let himself out, he found the door was wide open. So it was, had no handle, but it was locked shut. He couldn't open it. It's crazy.
Stuck shut.
The hotel is thought to be haunted by a ghost of the late U.S. District Judge Isaac Parker. He was notorious for the sentencing of 160 people to hanging executions.
Ugh.
I hate that. Others have reported seeing an African-American maid making her way through the mansion and is seen in the maid's closet.
Oh.
A lady in pink has been seen in the hall to the guest rooms, and an old sea captain has been seen inside the guest rooms. Phantom footsteps and disembodied voices are commonly heard too.
Okay.
If you stayed at the Empress of Little Rock, would it make you afraid-ish?
I don't know. I would have to, you know, I'd have to go to know if I'd be afraid-ish.
Yeah, it would be fun to go visit there.
Yeah. How far away is Little Rock from here?
I don't know.
It's further than Eureka.
I mean, it is the capital, so it's toward the middle of Arkansas.
Okay.
Pretty sure.
I don't know.
I am directionally challenged, and I don't know geography very well.
I know geography.
Giraffe-y.
I know geography of, like, places that have far less impact on my current life than the geography of my local region. Like, I could probably point out more places accurately on a map of Europe or the Middle East.
Yeah.
Than I could if you tried to get me to identify the counties surrounding our county.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
So, yeah.
Is that it? Is all you got?
Those are my stories. Okay. This is going to be a short episode, so I mean, nothing wrong with a nice short episode.
Yeah. I know you like them to be longer.
That's fine.
I have not been able to get my mind. So I have, like, really severe ADHD. Yeah. And I have not been able to get my mind to care enough about researching stories. Like, no matter how bad, I'm like, I need to research stories for Paul's podcast. And my brain's like, yeah, but why don't we spend the next 8 hours watching random videos on YouTube instead?
Yep.
And I didn't even realize that much time has passed. And I'm like, well, fuck. I just wasted an entire day learning how to skate backwards. And I don't even know how to skate forwards.
That is the way it goes.
Yeah. I'll try. I'm going to make a more concerted attempt at getting my brain to
considering care about how often I get these out.
I know.
Anyways.
This time, I mean, you knew you weren't waiting on me, so you were just
I know. It's just me. Yeah, I'm just trying to get some stuff done. Hopefully, this rainy weather will clear up a little bit so I can do some yard work, so I can clean out the garage.
Prep the garden bed.
Prep the gardens. Do all the springy shit I gotta do.
Adult?
Yeah, be a adult. Homeowner. I gotta adult.
Whoever said buying a house would be fun, man.
Yeah.
Maintenance.
Yeah. Anyways, if you have any stories or requests of anything you want to hear about, or if you know anyone who does,
or if you just want Ashley to shut up.
No. Please email us at afraidishpodcast@gmail.com, Instagram and Facebook at afraidishpodcast. Visit the website at afraid-ishpodcast.com, which I need to update because it's kind of blah. It's kind of bland. All the links will be in the show notes. Also, rate and review on Apple Podcasts and rate on Spotify. And obviously, I'll have pictures and everything on social media. And as always, don't be afraid of the dark.
Be afraid-ish of what's in it.
Bye.
Bye.